Hope you're enjoying this podcast brought to you by Changing Room Chat. This episode is sponsored by Nicopods Elite, and we have quickly stopped for an advertisement with our sponsors. You have 30 seconds, pal. Go.
Here at Nicopods Elite, we supply premium nicotine pouches. We operate in the Aberdeen area and supply next-day delivery throughout the UK to personal customers and also to businesses. We offer a wide range of brands such as Killa, Pablo, and many other fan favourites. Find us on Instagram now at Nicopods Elite, or browse our website at www.nicopodselite.com. Boom. There you go, diving easy full 30.
I know the feeling, brother. Welcome to episode 9 of Changing Room Chat. As always, sponsored by Nicopods Elite and Rulax Sports Body Massage. And as always, we're down today at New Advocates Park. Today, second time I've had him on, first time face-to-face, local boxer, Dean Sutherland. How you doing, pal?
I'm good, pal. Yourself?
Yeah, all good, all good. How's everything going?
Very, very good, mate. Yeah. Very, very good. Literally, we were just speaking about off camera. Just got it all good, all clear. So
everything's good to go.
I'm really excited for next year, mate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I seen your post the other day, Itchy Knuckles.
Very much so, very much. So actually, while we're probably doing this, the fight will get announced for my next fight date. So you'll get the exclusive.
So what is the plan?
So I'm back out the 10th of February at the Ardo Hotel.
Love it.
So nice quick one, get myself back in, get a bit of ring rust, as you would say, or just kind of get a bit of momentum back on my side.
Yeah.
And then already got a couple of big things planned for the second half of the year. So,
yeah.
But the first priority is get back out, make sure I'm 100% healthy and the performance up to my standards as well.
See, like your level, I don't know what it's like when you first start fighting, you probably just fight all the time. But see, now that you're, what are you, 15 fights in?
16
fights. Do you like to have your whole year planned?
It helps.
Yeah.
It helps. Like, it's okay if you're starting off where you're just doing four rounders. Like, my first year as a pro, I did 7 fights within a year and had my first title fight. So
okay.
I was really, really busy. But when you go to 8, 10, 12 rounders, the body takes, it's not the fight itself that takes a lot of damage to your body. It's actually the full preparation, like you were just speaking about as well. That if it's 10 round fight, we do 10 weeks of training and then fight week off. So it's 11 weeks basically.
Yeah.
You put your body through a lot of torture in that sort of period of time. So when you're putting yourself through that, you're going to pick up little niggles and injuries as you go on, but you need to have, that's a set period of time for your training, but you also need a bit of downtime to let your body recover instead of going 12 round. But as what you see guys that's at the very top, they'll do 2 or 3 fights a year.
Yeah.
But you'll never see any of them doing 4, 5, 6 of them a year. Yeah. It just doesn't work. When you're a young pro, you want to be busy. You want to be busy and it's 4 rounders. You can piss them in a nice possible way. You should be absolutely flying through them. But when it gets to the later rounds, you've got to change the opponent levels, go higher. So you then start doing training camps. It's working on different things instead of when you're starting off, but you know it's kind of going to be a journeyman that is there to make it difficult for you, but they're not really putting the opposition against you to try and win. You know what I mean? Like they'll make things awkward and make you work and try and make things look ugly for you.
Yeah.
But you as the pro, you should know that you're there to win. And most of the people would know that as well.
Is that enjoyable for you? So like as you're in the stage you're at now where you're fighting for titles and you're fighting really good boys, is that an enjoyable part when you're going down to camp and you're not just working on being fit and how to box?
Yeah.
You're working on tactics, you're working on what they're going to do, what you can do to stop them doing it.
That
must be in
it's much more intelligent side of things, because when, like I was saying, when it's like a four rounder and you're started off where you could go throw as much punches as possible and kind of just get to work and just overwork them basically. But then you'll see even a difference as soon as you go to 6 rounds, your style's got to slightly slow down a little bit. Or an 8 round, it's definitely got to slow down. If you try do the exact same blistering 100 miles an hour speed for a 4 rounder that you do a 6 or an 8, you'll be puffed very, very quickly for it. And also, as you go up through the levels, you see the top range, but nobody's throwing 150, 200 punches around. It's like you've got to control and work at the right times. You let your hands go in combinations, but a lot of it is singles setting up traps. Yeah. That's where it really comes down.
And that must be enjoyable to train.
Yeah, very much so.
Like it's different every day probably.
Very, very different. And you've got to be constantly working on not just blasting through and making sure your fitness is good, but then going, you've got to go right back to the fundamentals and make sure they're incredibly sharp. You've got to work on your fitness. You've got to work on your ring craft. You've got to think intelligence in that as well, which is like if you're doing an 8 rounder, yeah, you can go out and be very, very assertive, one, two, and three, but then you also need to be smart enough to win rounds while you're taking a break.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people, like, really, the top, top level guys will do that. They'll have a round off, as they would
yeah,
say,
yeah, yeah,
but they'll do it just enough yeah. to nick the round, but they're using it as a recovery yeah. round, and then they go right back up. And they
do
get
you just work on that sort of stuff?
Definitely. You've got to work it. Sparring is obviously one of the big things yeah. that you do it, because as live as you're possibly going to be.
Yeah.
But from the training side of things, it's got to be, like, if I'm doing a 10-round fight, I can't just go straight away my first day of training camp. It's going to be 10 rounds of sparring or 10 rounds of pads.
Yeah.
It's got to be, you've got to tune it and tune to be at the right,
yeah,
like peaking at the right moment.
Yeah.
It's the same as, like, even like my camp will do, like the last one, it was a 10-rounder. Started off doing 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 8. 8, 8, 6, 6, 8, 10, 10, right. and then back down to 8 and 6.
So you only do 10 a couple of times?
Well, like, if you can do 8 rounds, fine, you can do 10 rounds, fine.
Yeah, okay.
If you can do 10 rounds, fine, you can do 12 rounds, fine.
Right.
But it's just like keeping the quality there.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
no point doing 12 rounds, but after 6 or 7, you're just holding and hugging yeah, the whole okay. time. So it's like tuning at the right times. You'll peak, you'll have a good top quality spar normally. Normally, your hard sort of span will be 2-3 weeks before your fight.
Yeah.
Most likely 2 weeks. And then it's bringing it right back down, keeping everything sharp, because you don't want to pick up injuries,
yeah,
cuts,
yeah.
niggles, anything like that. So it's trying to peak at the right time and then keep everything sharp. So, like, my last bar, you'll do a 6-round, but you're really, really relaxed. You just want to have fun
right,
doing
okay.
it to make sure everything's primed, your confidence is right at the very, very
yeah,
top
yeah.
for then going into fight night.
Love that. So the last time we spoke was online, obviously. Like we said before we came on air, huge changes.
Massive.
Big
yeah.
time. I see the big smile on your face as soon as I say it. Biggest one for me was you went full time now.
Yeah.
That must mean all the difference in the world.
It was one of my dreams as a kid. I had two real dreams. One of them was being a full time athlete, the other one was fighting at Pataudry. So
yeah.
I've got one out of the way, getting close to the second one. But yeah, to go full time, be a full time pro, it's everybody dreams of doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like I'd always didn't know exactly what I wanted to do sports wise. I started off taekwondo, kickboxing,
yeah, yeah.
but I knew I just wanted to be a full time athlete. I didn't want to work a regular job, a 9-to-5, didn't interest
yeah.
me that side of things. But I knew the real world, you've got to pay your bills.
Yeah.
You've got to have a roof over your head. So when I'd left school, got an apprenticeship, and I was doing that, finished my apprenticeship being a sparky. And as I was coming towards the end of it and I'd fully qualified, I was like, I really need to start looking to go full time. The level that I was starting
yeah.
to operate at, that being part time training really early in the morning, working 9 hours, and then training again in the evening, I was kind of burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah.
I was trying to do as much training, but also work as hard as I possibly could at times, work overtime if it really needed to.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I know what I want to do is be a full time athlete.
Yeah.
I'm decent enough at my job and I enjoy it, but it's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like when COVID had obviously
yeah,
happened,
yeah.
that put a massive spanner in the works.
Yeah.
And I had to really, really sort out what I was going to do. I was nearly there to getting speaking to people for sponsorship to go
yeah.
full time before COVID. As soon as COVID, I kind of scrapped it. And then coming out of COVID, they actually managed to get a hold and speak to the managing director of Texo
yeah.
at the time, and they sponsored me. But kind of like a, because I was still working full time, it was kind of like a one lump, somewhat normal sponsorship
yeah,
they
yeah.
kind of do. Won my next two fights, which was the WBO Youth World Title and the WBC International Silver.
Yeah.
And then after that fight, I'd sat down with me and my dad was actually at an amateur boxing show at Inverurie,
okay.
and said, I need to do this full time.
Yeah.
I need to, like, the level that I'm operating at, where I'm getting ranked and all that, everybody above me in the rankings was all full time.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to do that to take the next steps in my career.
Yeah.
And it was an absolute blessing to be able to do that before the end of the year.
So what changes for you from going from, obviously, the work side of it's out? Mm-hmm. So does that just let you train harder, rest more in between?
That's the main thing, because, like, the training is always going to be intense. Every
yeah.
single time you go train, it's 110% effort that you should be given. But it's the big, big rest periods that I'm getting in between
yeah.
is a massive factor. It's not only for your physical health to obviously help and recover, but mentally as well. You're not
yeah, yeah.
you're not knackered, you're not tired of restraint, but also you've got a life outside of boxing as well.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like, right, I could see my friends, I could spend time with my girlfriend, I can go for a walk if I really wanted to. I've got like a mental coach that I work with.
Oh, so dear, okay.
Even getting little bits and pieces like that. If I was training in the morning, work, train in the evening, where does the time fit in really? But the way it is, you can schedule it out, get your rest and recovery, which becomes a priority. That's its own set time period and session, if you want to say, in itself, that needs to be a priority. But being full-time, you're able to maximise that.
So obviously, we'll touch on the London side shortly when we speak about Barry. But see, when you're at home, do you plan a week ahead, 2 weeks ahead?
Normally, it's different. Like when I'm outside a training camp, I'll just keep myself ticking over as much as I possibly can.
Gym.
So like going to the gym, I like running, so I like going for like long distance runs. It's nice and good for clearing my head, thinking, get my tunes on and just going for it. But most of the time, even outside of training camp, I've got set things that Barry wants me to work on.
Right, okay.
So like keeping my cardio nice and high is obviously one of the key ones, but working fundamentals as well. So it shouldn't just be when you're in training camp, you work box, and when you're out of training camp, you do whatever else you want to do.
It's
still got to work on stuff outside of camp, but then when it goes to in training camp, it's just tighter niche than working on specifically for fight night.
So what do you do when you're here at the boxing side? Davey still?
I still got a fantastic relationship with Davey. Still go and use the gym, help out with amateurs and stuff as much as I possibly can. Help chat to them about some of the experience, even help them out with little bits and pieces of sparring, which is good for me as well. When the amateurs, when it's three threes, it's really, really fast paced. Yeah, like a sprint the whole time, which is different for me as a pro, but also means I need to be sharp as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
But you need to get that right balance of sparring the amateurs and sparring pros. It's like try to get the right bit for it. But while I'm here just now, using the amateurs for my fitness side of things.
Right.
If they're going fast paced, I'm going two rounds in with one, two rounds with the next, two rounds with the next, two rounds. It's fast paced for them. It's tough for them, but also means I've got to think very, very smart about what I've got to do. I don't want to get to the same pace as them. I don't want to be too slow that they're just overworking you.
Yeah.
It's try to get the fine balance is the big bit. But yeah, being back up in the gym, working on fundamentals is the big strong put. And then Barry will have specific things that he wants me to do, specific sessions, working bag sessions. One of the nights is strictly shadow boxing, so you don't do any just punching on impact or that whatsoever. I've got a team session, which is basically like a really high intense between circuits and fitness work that needs to be done, and then I've obviously got like my strength conditioning that adds in as well.
See, when you're fighting sparring the amateurs and stuff, do they go for you a little bit more because you're who you are?
Yeah, they should do it as well. They should,
because you would have.
I would have done. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Like if that was an opportunity, that can not only is it going to help them for their side of things, but also for their own confidence. They're like, I'm going in with a good pro here. Like, let's try show off.
So you're not arse when boys are trying to.
True, right? Like
you like it.
See, if they didn't do that, I'd be more pissed off.
Yeah.
If they're going to go and be a proper go for it, and much, much rather that, because on fight night that's what it becomes. It's not touch, we'll give a wee hug and a wee laugh and a joke. On fight night it's serious. So even when I'm working with the amateurs, I'll work on specific things each round, or I'll look and try help them where mistakes that they're making. But when it comes to still in that 3 minutes that we're working, they're trying to punch me and I'm trying to punch them.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm trying to be a bit smarter about it.
You're trying to work on
it. I'm still trying to work on things, but if they weren't going for it, then it doesn't benefit them or benefit me whatsoever. So
it must be fun. Like, you've had your first session, you've been busy during the day, and then you go and make a young lads.
That's the best
part. You're thinking, fucking hell.
As we're talking, just now, I've got a bit of keto bumps. Ended up, I'm sparring with a couple of the amateurs on Monday. Did a couple of rounds, and then Big Iman, I'm not sure. Super heavyweight, right? And he was like, we're doing a bit of body sparring. I was like, no, fuck it. Get headgear on. We'll do our best part. He was like, you sure? I'm like, I'm ready. Are you? So then four rounds of the
hammer. He's a big boy.
He's a big, big lump of a lad. So, but things like that is only going to help me, because he'll never get sparring like that, especially in the gym. Heavyweight sort of things, it's really, really hard to get sparring a partner. But me, I'm up for it, because it's things I've got to work on. I've got to work on head movement. I've got to get my hand speed right up, and I've got to throw in bunches. I'm never going to hurt him with a single one punch. Being at the weight difference, it's like I've got to outwork him, make it hard for him, and it's going to improve his fitness at the same time as well.
Is he a favourite sparring partner of yours?
Definitely from body sparring. That's the first time we've actually done head sparring.
Oh, is it? Okay.
and I loved it and he loved it. So I can, I think it would happen a couple of times more, but it's just like try to be sensible with it as well. Yeah. I know the weight difference. I know that as soon as I get closer to my fight, that's not something that's going to be anywhere near sensible. I've got to be focused on closer to my weight category, closer to my size, and try to implement the tactics that I want to do for fight night.
So for, I'm going to touch on that, the body sparring side of it. I've been in gyms before, previous, I won't mention names, but they don't believe in body sparring at all. From a boxing point of view, I think it's really good. What's your thought? It needs to be done. Like,
it's to me, I'm kind of sitting in the fence. I'm 6 2/3. Yeah. I like body sparring because it's as close as you're going to get to normal sparring. You've got to still think and operate, find the openings.
Yeah,
but it's also then got its downsides where a lot of people will do the old, like, hands across as much as possible and not thinking defensively for the head, which obviously, you know, in boxing, probably 80% of the punches is to the head.
Yeah.
So if you're just walking about with your hands down your waist, it's not really helping that side of things. So it's got, definitely it's got its benefits, but it's also got its things as well, getting punched in the arms loads and loads of times. Yeah, it's probably good for a bit of conditioning, but also easier to pick up injuries.
Yeah, of course.
If you're only allowed to hit the body and people are sitting with their elbows out, you try to throw a body shot and you land right, your knuckles right on the elbow, it's easier to do that. Don't get me wrong, that could happen in normal sparring, but it's just the chances of it happening are prolonged or increased, definitely. Yeah.
When you go down to, when you go to London for your full camp, do you do any body sparring at all?
No, it's just all head sparring. Don't get me wrong, we'll do drills that might just be sort of body orientated, but the sparring that you do, even when it's in-house sparring, it's controlled, but it's still full body sparring, as close as what you're going to be fighting.
So we'll touch on the Louis Green fight. How was that for you? Obviously, I was there that night supporting yourself and Gregor. Great night, great atmosphere. How did you feel at the time? Because obviously I know, horrible thing to talk about, but you're smiling in your face, which is good for me.
Yeah.
It's a learning curve, eh?
Massively. It was a weird thing as well, because I can't even look at anything in my training camp to say I didn't do this or I did that wrong. The training camp, from what it had been up to that point of view, was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
From sparring, I was done sparring with David Avanesi, and it was phenomenal rounds I did with him. He actually, after that week of sparring, he was begging me to try and get another week of sparring.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was adamant that he was trying to get me, and we couldn't do it because it was too close to my fight. And so now, weight was never an issue, like for the check weight, and I was basically 0.2 over the championship weight. Like, the weight was no problem at all. Everything was fine, felt really, really good. A couple of things that I hadn't done before that I did do on fight week that I won't go into them, but I'll make a difference for going forward. I won't make that mistake doing it again. But then on fight night, it was like nothing really went right that whole day, if you know what I mean. Like, looking back at it in hindsight.
On the fight day.
The whole fight day. Like, for instance, like first thing in the morning when I'm making my porridge, getting ready, I drop my bowl and it smashed all over the place. Going to the venue, I forgot my boxing boots. On fight night, I had my one glove tied, and then I was like, fuck, I need to go to the toilet. Little things like that, back, like nothing went 100%.
Did that get in your head?
No.
Not at the time?
Not at the time. No. Not at the time, I didn't think about it. But then afterwards, you can hang to it, be after it. But the whole point was, I had 5 or 6 things that we'd worked on religiously in the gym.
Yeah.
And it was working and sparring. And I went out and remembered one of them, and that's all I did.
Head just empty.
Complete gone.
Yeah.
Complete out of it. Not a single thing was ticking off. The only thing I remembered was attack the body. I did that really, really good. Nearly won the fight doing just that.
Yeah.
But you've got to do a lot more than that when you're up against a good operator, especially for a Commonwealth title fight or something like that.
He's a good kid, eh?
Very, very good. Yeah. Very good kid. It's definitely a fight that I would want again in the future. After learning from the mistakes that I've done, I would easily take that fight. No problem at all. It's even one that we've kind of spoke about.
Is that a possibility?
I may be even pushing for towards the end of the year.
Right, okay.
But from a learning experience, don't get me wrong, after the fight, devastated. Probably the dullest, darkest 2-3 days that I've had for a long, long period. Because a lot of people don't realize, like, they just see on fight night and they're like, oh, you got beat, you got stopped, oh, poor you.
To them, it's done. Once the fight's finished, they're going home, they're going up the town.
But they also don't see the bit beforehand. So, like, I had a crapper of a year that year beforehand from haven't fight my sparring partner, Corey.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I basically got told 48 hours before you take the fight or the whole show gets cancelled. I'm sparring with him 6 days before we fought. I'm really, really good pals. And that, to then having two scheduled fights after that be cancelled, one 2 weeks before, one the date of the fight with the Queen passing.
I forgot about that.
So I had one fight that didn't go to plan, fighting my sparring partner, two fights getting cancelled, and then that fight opportunity. So it was one I had to take the opportunity while it was there. But if I was to go back and obviously have a bit of momentum building up to it, then I definitely would have. But it was basically from the fight that was supposed to happen in September when the Queen passed, I basically just went straight from that camp, had one or two days off, went straight back into it again. So I'd done 14 weeks worth of training to build up for that one moment and for it to go completely amiss. People don't see that. Like 14 weeks, birthday gave up, I was away in LA training, stuff like that. Like I took myself as much as I possibly could at the time in the scenario that I was to be at my best and then on fight night. The one moment that you need or would definitely want things to go right, it all went to pot.
So see, like during the fight, you were saying that you forgot stuff. Mm-hmm. See, when Davey gets you in the court, because you were still with Davey at the time, weren't you?
Yeah.
Does things go into your head when he's trying to speak to you?
Definitely, but it's the only time it's ever really happened to me of having like a complete blank of like, what's going on here? Even looking back at the fight, I can remember exactly the punch that I got caught with. But even like at the time, I got caught with the punch and then it almost felt like I blinked. The next thing, I've got two hands on the floor. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Stand up, you dick. And then I stood up far too quick. And then obviously I had a wee stumble and the referee stopped. I have no complaints whatsoever looking back at it. But even like looking back at the fight, right from the very start of the round, I just went the complete wrong tactics. David told me, round one, round two, round three, round four, right up until the fight was stopped, need to do this. And it just wasn't going in. I think the best round that I actually had was the fourth round, when I actually listened to some of the stuff that David did. And then I think I hurt him with a body shot at the end of the fourth round and got too excited. And the fifth round just went right back in a firefight. End up getting caught in your goal. That's going to happen.
Because that's what he wanted, wasn't it?
I went from exactly my tactics to exactly what he wanted to do. And obviously, that's what he's got most of his wins where he had a good bit of momentum building up to the fight and that as well. Yeah. So I know that if I went and took the fight again, I would try my hardest to stick to my discipline and obviously things that I had worked on beforehand. But you can't go back and change it now. You just got to live and learn from that.
Because that's obviously, I was at that fight with you, obviously, and then I went to his Balkine fight at the Caird Hall in Dundee. Exactly the same fight, mate.
Yeah.
First four rounds, Balkine was doing what he wanted. Mm-hmm. Louis Green was just there.
The whole time, yeah.
How do you deal with that shit when, like, obviously it's part of the fight, it's part of the plan, but when a guy's just in your face, do you get annoyed? Is it like, get the fuck out of my face?
It's hard, because, like, when somebody's that like suffocation too, that's always in your face, always within touching distance, that you can hit them, they can hit you at every moment.
Yeah,
your intensity is at a different level. If somebody's a meter and a half away or a meter away, you can't touch each other, you can relax.
Yeah,
but when somebody's in your face that whole time, it does become suffocation from it.
Yeah.
But the big thing as well is that I was fine with that. I thought, no problem at all, let's go for it. And I attacked the body really, really well, hit him with good counter shots, but then I just went, everything attack, nothing defense.
Yeah, okay.
Like, the big difference was, if somebody's coming at you like that and not really throwing punches, and you've hit a couple of shots, and then you just stand there with your hands covered up, and then you let them unleash, basically, you become a punch bag.
Yeah.
That they can work wherever they want to do. But the idea for me was, and what I didn't do was, attack the body, step back, counter, move.
Okay.
Let him chase me again.
Yeah.
And just keep bringing him into traps the whole time. Where the difference was, didn't set up any traps. I just went, me, you, center. Here we go. Foot to foot. And I was having success. I think that's a bit as well. If I wasn't having any success, then, you could easily have said, right, I'll get back on my bike and I'll move about the box. Yeah. But because I was having success,
when you were in, of course,
I was like, I'm doing it right. But landing two, three good shots, but taking three, four back doesn't work out. That's what's going to happen eventually. And it was the exact same. It was, I'd he'd landed a shot, I just went for it. It was almost like too reactive.
Yeah, okay.
Like instead of going right, block, block, move, it was like, you hit me, I'm going to hit you straight back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the big difference I'd got. He was in the middle of a combination when I tried to obviously throw my two shots, got caught just in between caught, the two of them. And it happens, it's boxing at the end of the day.
See, I find this with football, and I want to know if it's the same with boxing. I'll watch, be it football, coach, I'll manage a game, and I'll see it one way. And then I'll watch it back on the VO or the whatever afterwards. And I'm like, that's is it the same in boxing?
Total different.
When you watch a fight back, you're like, what the fuck is that?
Total different. Yeah, yeah. But you'll, like, I always watch my fights back.
So have you watched the Lee Green one?
I've watched it multiple times. And I think you've got to do that to live and learn from it. Like, the big thing as well for me is, like, I always watch it back to look at the good things. I'll watch it like 3-4 times, watch the good things. And then I'll watch it 10, 12 times for the things it didn't do right.
Right, okay.
So, like, that fight, I was, like, straight away, I wrote down, like, attacked the body well. I set up a couple of the shots good, landed a couple of good counter shots. But then the negative, didn't move, didn't set up enough traps, let him come to me, get backed up against the ropes too much, kept moving to my left, which was his right-hand side, his power side, simple little things like that. That I'm like, well, I've got 3 or 4 positives. 7, 8, 9 negatives. So I'm like, that's where I've got to. The positives, good.
Yeah.
Add more of them, but the negatives, I need to.
What I really like about what you just said is, and it's obviously how your mentality is. Because see, for me, if I was to watch my fights I've had that I've got beat, if I look at them back, I would just look at me getting the negatives, and I'd be like, "Fuck's sake, Robbie." Whereas you've said that even in a fight that's not went your way, you still looked at the positives.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a strong thing from you, because I wouldn't do that. Even if I've had a couple of rounds, which is good, I would just be looking at me getting stopped, me getting hit, and I'd be focused on that to probably my own detriment. Whereas you're still happy to go, nah, did that well. Like, that works. So that's like, that's a real positive thing.
You've kind of got to know, even like when you do good performances and you win, and you think, oh, it was a piss easy fight.
Still got to look for something.
You still got to be clinical on what you did, because realistically,
are you hard on yourself?
Oh, you've got to be. If you want to be better and improve yourself, you've got to be harsh on yourself.
Yeah.
Like, other people can tell you stuff and you're like, yeah, okay, I can understand it. But when it clicks in your own head, you're like, need to do that right.
Yeah.
I did that wrong. Right. I'm laser focused on it. It's okay somebody telling you, oh, yeah, you moved to your left too much. Like, yeah, okay. Like, it kind of goes in. Yeah. You take a little bit, but it passes. But if I know myself, like, fuck, I'm moving to my left far too much.
Yeah.
The next week in the gym will solely just be circling as much as I possibly can to the right. So it's trying to get the fine balance, because you need to be clinical of yourself, but you can't be down in the dumps with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for instance, if I went down in the dumps, I had a horrible 2-3 days after the fight. But then the best thing that I did was go out for a meal with my mum and dad, my girlfriend afterwards. And then I went down to Edinburgh, I met my mate and go play golf. Absolutely kicker of panda black eyes, huge one side, right? Yeah. Getting stared at the whole time, but I went out and enjoyed myself. And that boxing fight was the last thing on my mind at that time. When I was sitting in the house for 2-3 days by myself, it was the only thing that was on my mind.
Yeah.
So you need to be focused on boxing, but you also need to have time away from it as well.
Obviously, you'd said that you've dealt with it by going away, going with your family and stuff, but the 2-3 days afterwards, lonely place, horrible place. I've been there myself, not to your level, but I've still been in that place where you think your world's over now.
Yeah, 100%.
How did you get yourself to that point where you were in the house? How did you get yourself to the point where you went out with your family? Was it a case of just
forcing going, Dino? I just needed to.
You speak to yourself. Come on.
I'm like, this isn't doing anything at all.
Yeah.
Like, I was bored out my mind and then didn't want to do anything, but the only thing that I was doing was thinking in my own head of all the errors that I've done. And then, you know yourself, like, once you go one or two negative things, you just go down the rabbit hole and it spirals massively. Yeah. So the best thing that I did was go out for a meal with my mum, dad, my girlfriend, have a good laugh about it, laughing at jokes. I was sitting in I think it was 6 by Nico that we went.
Yeah.
Sitting there, beautiful sunny day. And I'm sitting there with these big blacked out shades on the whole time, just laughing and joking. Even like when I went down to Edinburgh with my pa, I think that was the Tuesday or Wednesday, we went to go play golf, like, getting asked at pubs and bars and stuff like that when we were going out, like, oh, what happened? You must have been a right mess. I'm like, just, you got to laugh and joke about it. Because at the end of the day, I kind of go back and change the time. I can only go forward with it and learn from it. So.
Do people come and ask you? Like in Edinburgh? Oh, like, people just come up and...
Sometimes, like, obviously, once I've had a couple of extra pints, then you've got a bit of courage to come and ask you. But, like, yeah, it happens all the time. And you kind of get accustomed to it. You know that things are going to be asked and brought up. That, like, in that case, it was my first time losing, so I wasn't sure how I was going to react about it. But I was just 100% genuine. Like, at the time, if somebody came up to me and was like, having a laugh and a joke about what happened to your face, then I'd be dead serious and tell them exactly what happened, exactly where to go, most likely. Like, because I'm 100% open with myself, it's like, yeah, I got beat in my first title fight. I'm a professional boxer. It happens.
It happens.
If you go swimming, you're going to get fucking wet.
Do you get much negatives? Like, you mentioned a comment earlier on about someone saying that you're going too left and all that. Mm-hmm. One of my favourite things to do, and it annoys me, but I love it, is when someone good gets beat,
mm-hmm.
you go on Instagram and you see these absolute fucking zeros, mate, mm-hmm. commenting being like, he dropped his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get much of that?
To be fair, no. I don't. I keep my cell at my cell, and obviously...
Would you read stuff like that?
Oh, I'd read it.
Would you?
100%. Like, I've had bits and pieces of... I think the very first time I had that was... I was 8-0 fighting a guy that was 9-1. It was my the last fight before COVID. And I'd convincingly beat him. I'd walk the park with him. Really, really comfortable. And then I remember going in.
Was that the Italian guy?
No, Bazzi, was that? I think from Newcastle or something. Oh, right, like And, like, obviously enjoying myself the night. Next morning, I'm sitting there having breakfast. Look, I've got, like, 5 or 6 DM requests. What's this? Every single one. You slayed. You cheated. Our man clearly won. And I just put laughing faces back to every single one of them. That was the first time I'd ever had that, really. And I was like, get somewhere.
Mate, if you're getting it, you're getting it.
If you're getting, like,
you're doing something right.
You've got to take the good with the bad. Yeah. Everybody's going to be critical of you. If you do things good, you do things bad. Everybody's got an opinion at the end of the day.
Because I just find it mental, because recently Gregor has been doing TikTok lives, mm-hmm. and just us training. Mate, the abuse he gets.
Just get rid of it.
Holy fuck. So, I'm obviously a big guy. So, I was panicking when we first did it. I thought, Padman, I'm going to get abuse here. Mm-hmm. Mate, no one says anything to me. But Gregor, that can actually fight,
mm-hmm.
he just gets slated in. Yeah. And you look at profiles of boys saying stuff and you're like, what the fuck
are you on about? Like, at the end of the day, the biggest thing that's going to be driving at is jealousy.
Yeah.
They can't do it themselves.
It's a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It really is. Because, like, they don't have the bottle to do exactly what you're doing. So. Yeah. Make the most of it. If they're trying to bring you down to be on the same level as them, because they don't have the guts to try and step up to the level you're at.
Yeah. Another thing we spoke about earlier on, you said about the Louis Green fight, obviously, mm-hmm. you got drawn in a gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite fights I've watched of you was the one at the ballroom. I think it was the Italian guy.
Yeah.
You surely weren't meant to have a gunfight that night, were you?
I knew it was going to be tough. I really thought, especially being like the former Italian champion, I think he'd won it two times. He'd been beat, but it'd all been like by points and really close decisions that he'd been beat. Never been stopped at that, and I knew he was going to be coming for it.
Yeah.
And on the night, I was right up for it. I'm just like, let's go for it.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing with me as well, at the time, really, really struggling with the weight, which didn't help my performance side of things as it was. But what a fight. Like, one of the questions.
Oh, mate, so good.
By far my favourite fight.
Yeah.
Like, for is the only fight that I've ever been in where you actually have mentally questioned myself, like physically was said it? To myself, am I going to get this guy out of here?
Yeah.
Like, I knew I was winning the rounds because I was landing the bigger, cleaner shots, but every single time I'd hurt him, he'd come back.
Yeah.
He'd come back every Such single a good time. Fight, mate, yeah. And it was always like, I think I nearly stopped him the end of the second round, end of the third round, end of the fourth round.
Yeah.
And I'd see every single round that as soon as I nearly stopped him the next round, he came out like an absolute Tasmanian devil. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to get rid of you. And then five, I slowed down the pace. I was like, right, I need to think, I need to recover. I used a lot of energy trying to get rid of him in that couple of rounds.
Yeah.
Five was a bit more rested. Six started being a bit more clinical and getting my feet and stuff like that set. I worked really, really good to the body in combinations beforehand, so I knew it was going to eventually get to him.
Yeah.
And then 6 and 7 started really putting my foot down and putting some more meat into the shots.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the final shot was actually one that I'd been looking for all night, that I knew that if I went, he went, I went, he went. That was always going to be the rhythm that was going to go, that I needed to break that rhythm. So I went, and as soon as he was going, that's when I hit him with a big counter. And at the time, I thought, right, let's just keep going. And I thought the referee was just going to give him a camera. Looking back at the video, the jelly legs, his legs had crossed over.
Yeah, he
was looking at the opposite side of the ring, and he was on the way with it. So probably the most learning curved fight as I possibly could to really, really test myself, but by far my favourite fight.
In the ballroom, mate.
I was bouncing.
Because obviously you've had that one, you had your comeback one, but then you had the Louis Gray one in between.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah, it's different gravy. Like having the home support and stuff like that is.
Oh, and Harper in the gang.
Oh, that absolute madness. But like people like that is what you really, really like appreciate.
Yeah.
Because they've seen the good, they've seen the bad, still want to come back.
I think Owen's been every single one of them.
Every single one. Basically, like, even like my comeback fight and stuff like that, it was his birthday weekend. He'd used his birthday weekend with my boxing fight to make the most of it. So like things like that, like I'm truly, truly grateful for. And then straight away, as soon as my next fight, I put out a couple of messages saying this is where my next fight's going to be. Straight away, he's like, I've got a table sold for you already. I'm trying to get the second one done. Like having somebody like that, you don't even need to chase up.
Yeah.
That just goes out and does it for you. Like that's proper somebody that cares about you.
I remember seeing it at the time, but then I seen it again when I was doing research for this interview. That from that fight with the Italian guy, there's an ace photo of he's on the floor, you've got your hands then hands up, and Owen and all that are behind you in the suits.
And you see that
it's just body
shapes going everywhere. The facial expressions is brilliant. I think I've got a video from somebody else that was up on the balcony of like right over the top of where they are.
Just bodies everywhere.
And there's like two or three tables that's closest to the ringside. They've obviously paid good money to be there. And Owen and Ann's basically on their table. What a laugh it is. But like, you can't beat supporters like that.
Yeah.
You can't, because they'll be the guys that'll be there from me when it started till they'll be the ones that will do their absolute best to be with you the whole time.
See like things like the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get more nervous fighting at the ballroom than you would other fights?
No, it does put an extra, what do you say, a bit of pressure on it, because a lot of the times when I'm, well, like near enough every time that I fought in the ballroom, it's been the main event and you've sold a good amount of people to come there, and most of the time people are there for just your fight when it comes to it. Yeah, they'll entertain the other fights on the undercard and stuff like that, and obviously people like Gregor or Billy and stuff like that that was there, they've got their own supporters, but a lot of the time you're there for the main event that happens to come on afterward. So being at the ballroom is brilliant for myself. The very first time I'd fought, the very first time I'd actually fought there was in a Thai boxing fight.
Okay.
I think I took the fight on like 3 weeks notice and I sold like 110 tickets and the place was bouncing for the 100, like it was so quickly. So I knew that that was the place that I wanted to get going. I've kind of made it my own now and I'm really kind of the fringe sort of level. I've maybe got one or two more fights at the ballroom and then I'm needing to step up to something else afterwards.
And where is that step up?
Locally, it would obviously be Tekka would be the next one. The next one that we're looking at. It's kind of had sort of early talks with them, how that's going to look. And it's a big, big difference because I think when they were speaking about the ballroom, the way we set up with the tables, the ring and the balcony, I think it's about 900, 950 it holds.
Yeah.
The smallest room at the Tekka that it could do was 3,500. But obviously, that would just be seats. If you brought that into tables, you could maybe get that down to about 2,500.
Okay.
But still, it's a bigger jump. Yeah. It would need to be, obviously, a good card underneath and plus good titles that's on. Like, it couldn't just be one half-decent title and then quite a lot of undercard fights. It's maybe four renders or six renders. You would need to be...
Titles,
if it is going to be four or six render guys that's on it, guys that's selling good tickets to be on there. It would need to be ones like that that, like say, even if they say you've got to sell a minimum of 50 tickets to even be considered for the show, you would need something like that. When, especially because you're not going to get a lot of guys from the central belt that will come up and do it. They've kind of got their own venues, Hydro, everything, and the good hotels and stuff like that down there. But Tekka would be the biggest thing for the north of Scotland. So you could get guys all the way from Inverness, Dingwall. You've got Ben Bartlett at Dingwall. Yeah. You've got Fraser at St Elgin. Then you've got, for instance, like myself and Gregor at Aberdeen. You could even get a couple of folk that would be maybe like Dundee, Perth would probably do that because they're kind of in the middle between the two. But that would be the idea. That's either that for myself, but the big thing is what I'm really, really looking for. That can kind of take a back step for me as I need to push myself on my career looking for TV.
Yeah,
the
TV first.
That's the big thing for myself.
Which I agree with, but I'm going to put you on the spot here. You mentioned Pitadri earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
See, for you, so I'm a big Tony Bellew fan. Mm-hmm. And when he fought, he only fought at Goodison once.
Once, yeah.
And that was for his first shot. Well, his first proper chance of winning a world title.
Yeah.
Is that something, would you keep Pitaudry for just for a big one?
It would need to be special for him. Yeah. Like, it couldn't be one.
Because it could only be once. Huh?
And the one thing as well, you wouldn't want to do it in justice. Like, I wouldn't want to do Pitaudry for, say, a British title or a Commonwealth title. Because it's never going to get the right traction.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be massively undersold. Even if everybody sells their hardest to sell tickets, the size of Pitaudry, was it like 18,000 or something like that? Normally, like the way you would get situated, like it would be really, really hard to sell that fight. Where the difference is, like Tony Bellew fighting for a world title fight, a local lad, his local team fighting at his local stadium, that sells itself.
Yeah.
Everybody, anybody that's associated with a football club and the area wants to be involved.
Yeah.
But it needs to be for the right circumstances. That's the biggest thing. So I know for myself, I would do Pitaudry, it would need to be something special towards it.
But it's always something to work towards.
Oh definitely. It's definitely the goal that towards it. And that's what you get into.
That's what you're there for, is it?
That's what you get into the thing for.
So we kind of came away from it, but after the Louis Green fight, am I right in saying you had one more fight with Davey?
I had one more fight up here with Davey.
Yeah.
That I wanted to make sure, and nice possible, I wanted to go out on a winning side.
So did you already know?
I kind of already made a couple of things that I'd thought to myself. I wasn't sure if I was 100% going to be leaving or exactly where I was even going to be going. But at the time I thought, right, let's get the fight out in February, get right back into the swing of things. Because I think it was like the 26th of November that I'd obviously got beat. And I think it was right at the start of February. So it wasn't a long period of time that I took out. I think I took 2 weeks out of the gym and I was right back into the gym again for February. So I knew that I wanted to go out and win and obviously get back into the swing of things. Kind of leads on to like the injury. I already knew before that fight I had picked up a bit of an injury.
Yeah.
Hurt or worse in that fight, which looking back I probably shouldn't have done, but I needed to win that fight and get right back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing was Davey and the guys that we got, especially Davey, is a phenomenal coach, like a great, great coach. The big difference was me being full-time and being the only full-time pro in the gym was hard to get that one-to-one attention with him. I'd said to Davey, if I could take you away from your job and from the amateur side of things and you be my only pro trainer, I probably would have stuck with him for a lot, lot longer.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, Aberdeen then has got its own location problems trying to get sparring partners and all that side of things, but from the only coaching point of view with Davey, I thought Davey was a great, great coach, but what I needed to then get to the next level and get to the operations, what I wanted to do, I needed to take myself out of the comfort zone. I needed to have a full-time coach that could orchestrate any single time during the day with me to get one-to-one time and attention, travel for sparring and all that different side of things. So I knew that I had to get that fight out the way. I wanted obviously to go out on the winning side with Davey.
Yeah.
And when me and David spoke to each other after COVID, when I'd first came back to the gym, or like during COVID, I would say, he'd said to me, if I can get to British Commonwealth title level, I've done my job.
Right.
So we kind of knew an understanding between each other that there was only going to be so far that he was going to be able to take me with the gym location, all that side of things. Yeah. If you look at Matty and Lee, his brothers, they both traveled to really win their stuff. So him and his family know how boxing really, really works.
Yeah.
They know if you're going to, you can get to a certain title level, and I'd done really, really well winning the stuff that I did with him. If I'd won the Commonwealth title, I probably would have slowed things down. I could have stayed in Aberdeen for a bit longer. But the big thing with me is I don't want to stay in my comfort zone and just fight at the ballroom 2 or 3 times a year.
Yeah.
Make okay money and be comfortable sitting at home. Like, I want to be successful in the sport that I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I knew that I needed to take myself out of my comfort zone, away from it. If I couldn't get the top quality spot, I'm going to go to where it is.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing for myself.
And then that's where Barry comes in.
And that's where Barry comes in.
I love Barry. I met him with you at Nando's before the ballroom fights.
Yeah, that last
fight. Yeah, yeah. I was a little fanboy. Like, I love him. So how? Because you trained with him before you actually
Yeah. So I'd done. I think I'd done.
So where did you find? Did you find him? Did he find you? How did it come about?
Barry had at the time he had one fighter signed with Sam that he was coaching.
Right.
So That's how it kind of tied in, and he was chatting to Sam, and Sam was chatting to me, and thought Barry would be quite a good fit.
Yeah.
And then eventually I started speaking to Barry, kind of got that bit of a tie, and I thought, you know what? What have I got to lose? I'll go down and I'll do, like, I think it was a 1 week that I went down to the first time in London to just get a feel of what it was like.
Yeah.
Loved it. Instantly. Hooked on. Not only just Barry, me and him gelled really, really quickly, what he was wanting me to be doing fighting style-wise, the training side of things, and then just being down in London was completely different. Being right out of my comfort zone, yeah. All the different things was exactly what I needed. And then before the February fight that I had another 2 weeks down with Barry. So I was kind of feeling out the process, yeah. What it was going to be like. The last thing that I wanted to do was just go, right, Davey, unfortunately, I'm leaving, I'm going here. And I never even met the person before.
Yeah, you wanted to.
Chat to them on Instagram a couple of times and, like, go uproot my whole life and move down there. It's too big a decision.
Because it's got to be a trust thing, eh?
Oh, it's a massive,
it's trust,
thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, when it comes down to it, like, straight away, I had a really, really close and strong connection with Barry. Straight away, the very first conversation that we had was about the loss. Like, once the fight, I'd done a week down there before, that was fine. Training was going pretty good with them. Everything went great during the camp, got beat, and then the build up to the February fight, the very first thing that we spoke about was the defeat.
Yeah.
What would I have done right, what I did wrong, what he would have had me doing, what we needed to change, things that I did good in the fight, things I did bad in the fight, and it was lined up very much with what I was saying.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, he understands where I'm looking to be. I understand what he's looking for as well.
Works
so it kind of gelled very, very quickly with it. Did the 2 weeks with him, loved it, and was speaking to him there. And I thought, right, well, if I'm really going to make something myself, this is the sort of time to make that jump. I've had my first loss. I'll get a comeback win, and then I've got to push myself. Whatever I was doing here was fine. Obviously, everything needs to go right for the performance to then happen on fight night. But I just needed something different, just needed something else to then take me to that next level.
Yeah.
And then the hard bit about it was I had such a fantastic training camp done with Barry for the 10 and a half weeks I've done for the ballroom fight.
Yeah.
But struggling and trying to maintain with the injury. Looking back, and it probably should have been called pretty quick.
Right.
But I knew straight away that the training camp was good to then just try to manage the last 2 or 3 weeks with the injury.
Yeah.
Then the most disappointing thing for me was I'd put all the hard work in down in London, how I was looking, how I was sparring, the people I was sparring, was right through the roof, and then the performance at the end. I gave myself probably a D at that point.
Oh, really?
Don't get me wrong, I got the stoppage, but I was poor the whole night.
Yeah.
Really, really, like, and I think it's the very first time I'd actually came out of a fight and said to Barry straight away, I'm really sorry, that was not to our standard.
Did you apologise?
The very first thing that I said to him, not even real congratulations, or like, well done, thanks very much, that I'd got the fight over and done, literally in the ring, was like, I'm really sorry, that was not to our standard.
And how did he take that?
He understood it straight away, because the big thing is, well, I'm open and honest with anybody that's close and that I speak to, that he was probably thinking that, but I just had the acknowledgement to see it straight away. It opened up, right, okay, no problem at all, let's just get out of the way. Got the win, got the stoppage,
enjoy it,
got the fight out of the way, got a first fight camp, he was going through things, I was going through things, let's get over and done with, got the win, at all people remember, get the shoulder proper recovered, get that out of the way, start fresh next year. That was a big thing.
Because he seems like quite a positive guy. Obviously, I only see him on Instagram, mm-hmm. but he seems like when you're apologising, it's a forget about it.
Yeah. And the big thing is, well, he's very much involved with everything that we do, even from when we're doing our warm up, we're skipping, he's watching.
Okay.
When we're the biggest thing I would say with Barry is, like, there's me, Junior, and Nathan, his three pros that he's got.
Yeah.
Each of us, every single day that we're in working with him, getting an hour and a half dedicated time with him.
Right.
You've got to be in half an hour early, or 15 minutes early, to say, to get ready, get your boots on, get your hands wrapped by him while the other person's finishing off their stuff.
Right.
You're ready to go. As soon as one's done, now you've got your hour and a half full attention span, from skipping to the shadow boxing routines that we've got to go through, from our specific warm-ups that we've got to go through, from the pad work to bag work to sparring, it's like Hawkeye's right over the top. You can't get away with anything. It's not like, right, okay, 10 minutes, the timer's on for 10 minutes of skipping for the warm up. And then Barry fucks off, and then 2 minutes later, I'm just sitting there playing on my phone or something. It doesn't work. It's what, don't get me wrong, we're chatting, we're having a laugh and a joke, but he's also there making sure that's fine.
Yeah.
Doing the shadow box, and we've got a set specific 4 rounds he wants us to do to start priming us up for what's then going to be for our boxing session.
Yeah.
Even that, if you're doing, you could be laughing and joking, dancing when you listen to music, whatever it's going to be, but if you're making simple mistakes, you get stopped. This is what you're doing. Go.
Yeah.
Sort out now.
It's quite strict.
You've got to be. Yeah. Like, you've got to be. Especially, like, a lot of the time is a lot of people just do what they feel is good for them.
Yeah.
Like, lots of people, if they throw a good left hook, every single combination, they'll try to finish off. But if a coach can instantly see that, then your opponent's coach can see that, and your opponent can see it. So the difference is, you can get away with it when you're early and you're not really fighting anybody, but even by Scottish title level, you should be getting picked up on that thing. Or maybe even, you might not get beat in the fight, but you might get punished for it once or twice. You got scalped, but the big difference is when you go up in levels, that once or twice that you get punished turns into 3 or 4 times, and they become serious shots that you're getting caught.
Yeah,
so it's like, you need to cut the habits out as early as possible, and the only way you can do that is going right to the fundamentals. If you think that, I want to throw Mayweather punch combinations on the pads, then can you throw a jab properly? You throw a double jab properly. Like, you need to do all that right. And it's not just after the double jab, it's then double jab and move. Which way are you moving? How's your hands? Is your stance sitting right? Are you, could you go forward again? Or could you go back? Could you move to the side?
Yeah, okay.
Is your shape right for that? And that's one of the big things with Barry dialed in. Like, the full 2 weeks that I did beforehand, did a little bit of punching, but the biggest thing that he was working on me was shape.
Right,
I've got quite big legs for a boxer through my kickboxing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then trying to use that to the biggest capability, which I wasn't really doing before.
Right, okay.
And I know I've got power, but just not utilizing my full body for the power. Yeah. Where the difference is, like in sparring, as soon as I had my shape right and I was punching through the target.
Yeah,
that's a big thing. So I think just working with Barry, getting a bit of more consistency working with him, obviously, to do one camp and then be away for 6 months was not ideal whatsoever. Yeah. Definitely what we didn't want to do. So that's why we'll get this fight out in February, done for the month with him, come home for 2 weeks, and then I'll be right back down. I've got a decent enough fight looked up for the next part of the year.
So obviously, we spoke about it off camera, but majority of people that will listen know, but you moved your whole life down to London for 10 weeks.
Yeah, it was 10 and a half weeks officially.
How was that?
A culture shock, I'll tell you that. For instance, where the gym that we were training at the time was the GB top team, so it's basically an MMA gym.
Right, okay.
But Barry was doing their striking side of things, had his own boxing ring and all that, had full use of the place.
It was
a beautiful, beautiful facility run by Brad Pickett. It's
great. Guy used to wear the hat.
Yeah. Great fighters that he's got in there. He's got a lot of guys from the MMA side of things that's in UFC, Bellator, Cage Warriors. Like, the place is a top notch if you're looking for an MMA point of view. And that's in South London in Morden. When I was looking about, I couldn't really see too much, and managed to get an Airbnb situated, and it was the perfect thing for me. It was a stone throw from a train station for getting about London.
Right, okay.
So that was the biggest thing for it. But it wasn't until I'd really went down there that I got the biggest culture shock. I was between West Croydon and Streatham, so two rough areas as it is. And then even, like, I think my flight down was delayed, so I think by the time I travelled from Gatwick to where I was staying, it was about 10 o'clock at night. Going into the Airbnb, goes into my room, did not look anything like the pictures. Straight away, I'm on FaceTime with my mum and dad, and my face is like a ghost.
Yeah.
They're like, Dean, are you okay? We'll try and get you something else. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to have to soldier it through. I'm just going to have to. I've booked and I've paid up.
Did you pay up for the whole?
Well, basically, you had to book in fuel for it, and then the money eventually came off after each month because I was going for the length of period of time. But my face, when I'd walked in the place, I went, oh my god, I'm here for 10 weeks. I'm like, right, I can't change it now.
Yeah,
I've just got to go with it. I've got to try take as much home comfort as I can and put it into the place as much as possible. It was like a, I think I had six bedrooms. So it was me and five other bedrooms that was in it. I had a good sized room, don't worry, it was lovely. But like, for instance, when I walked in, I had my own fridge. Fridge was broken.
Brilliant.
There was like the floor tilings were all cracked or was lifted up. Skirting boards missing. One of the doors, my cupboard was hanging off, and I'm like, "Oh, this is like Beirut. Like this is not going to go well." And the biggest thing is, I had the kitchen basically where my headboard was straight into the kitchen.
Right.
So that was fine enough. I was nice and close for getting in and out of the kitchen with anything that I needed. Two bathrooms, it was in place, and I was like, you know, after about a week or so, I was like, "It's fine.
Yeah, it's
right. Fine. It'll do the job." Basically, it was. Up early, away to training, travel to the next training, back home, chill out.
Yeah, okay.
Exact same again. Next day, next day, next day, next day. But it was for where I was staying, it was a big, big culture shock. But then even more so from the boxing scene down in London, it was basically you could throw a stone and hit a good quality gym.
Yeah.
And it was like sometimes up here, if you had sparring organized and something happening cancelled. You probably wasn't sparring that week. You'd probably have to wait till the week after. Whereas down there, if sparring got cancelled, you can make a couple of phone calls and the very next day you've got a world-class operator.
Yeah, that's good.
So that was a big, big thing. Instead of travelling for the sparring was, I brought myself to the sparring side of things.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
To really, really see where I was wanting to be. And then obviously some of the guys that I was in the sparring with pretty quickly travelled to Liverpool to spar with Liam Smith and a couple of the guys in the Rotunda gym.
Yeah.
That was because... one of the girls from the MMA side, I think she was fighting in Liverpool, and Barry does her striking, so all right, so we've got to make a trip of it there. Sparred with Liam Smith, sparred with Adam Azim, Hassan Azim, O'Hara Davis, the Fail Twins. I had some top quality sparring at the time. It was good to travel about to these different gyms and get my face known about, and that was a big thing about London. It's a connection kind of thing.
Even
when you go to a gym, it might not be for that specific person that you're sparring, but some of the people that you meet alongside.
Yeah, yeah.
Like one of the best stories I've got was away sparring with the two Fail Twins, and that was in like Finchley, North London. So it was like from where I was in South London to North London, I think it was like an hour and 40 minutes of travel to get there. So it was a long time traveling, especially first thing in the morning. But I knew Barry wasn't well, but he said he was going to try and make it and end up phoning me while I was on the train to say that he wasn't going to manage, but the owner of the gym, he really trusted and would look after me.
Yeah.
Didn't know who it was at the time. Till I went there, it was Don Charles, who was a trainer of Derek Chisora, and was then just training Daniel Dubois.
Fuck.
So he came, got my hands and stuff like that, chatting away to him, and he was like, damn, back southpaw, quite slick. He's seen a little bit of my spar with him a couple of days before, and he said, so I had no problem at all. Well, he said, go out, enjoy yourself the first one, and I'll come back and tell you what I think. Came back, and he was just, the very first words was, you're my type of fighter. He's like, I like you.
Nice.
I was like, oh, class. And then at the end of it, he was like, very, very happy with everything he did. He was like, I actually scored it. And I'll tell you right now, you didn't lose a round.
That's good.
Cool. Like little things like that, like a confidence boost. Even if I did probably get beaten one or two of the rounds, for him to then come back and see like, the confidence side of things, chatting away, it was great, great,
that
great experience.
Unreal when you walked out.
Straight away, I was on the phone telling Barry how the span and stuff like that went, what Don Charles was saying, and he was like, lad, that's exactly what I already knew it was going to be.
Yeah.
But to have sometimes need a different perspective in that included also.
So you didn't know it was Don Charles until you walked in?
Didn't know at all. I kind of knew
he was there.
I kind of knew it was his gym because I'd seen pictures of him up with Derek Chisora and a couple of the belts and all the Lonsdale stuff. But the very first time I'd went, I never spoke to him. And then the actual first time I spoke to him was for the sparring. Just him getting warmed up. He said, I'm going to look after you and stuff like that for today. How do you like hands like tied up for the gloves? I like it nice and tight up here. Yeah, cool. I'll go with that. Chatting away to him, he was like, I'll let you do your first round, have fun, enjoy yourself, and then I'll come back and see what I can pick up for it. End of the first round, he was like, you're my type of fighter.
That's so cool.
He said, just keep doing what you're doing, I had a couple, a little bit more fakes, and he said, just enjoy it. Just, and that was basically every single time. Really, really relaxed. Said, like,
he must be calm. Chisora's off his fucking
Well, honestly, he said about five or six words the whole time. And it basically just like, was relax, it? Chill, keep doing what you're doing, breathe, fake, enjoy yourself. That was basically it. Like, simple, really, really easy, broke down. And it was like every single time I went out, I was just getting better and better.
Yeah,
and better.
Yeah,
and I could see the smile on his face every single time I was coming back. You could see the joy that he was enjoying it as well. So it was a fantastic experience.
Two things that's kind of come off of me from this. One, when you went down there, obviously you mentioned earlier on that being in Aberdeen, you were the only pro in the gym. Going down there, there's more pros. Does that make a big, like, I know you said you got an hour and a half with Barry. But having boxers that are going through the same as you, they're probably free at nights the same time as you. Does that make a huge difference?
It definitely does. But even for instance, like if I'd done my S&C in the morning and then went to the gym and then I'm having my lunch in the like chilling out area, there was good quality MMA fighters that's doing the exact same thing. They're sitting, watching tapes, reading books, playing chess, having a laugh and a
chess.
Joke. Little things like that. Having a joke, but then straight away you build up a good relationship with other fighters and that as well. Don't, like, most of the time after our tough session that I did with Barry, our team session, I'd go for a sauna.
Yeah.
But then, for instance, like, there maybe be one or two of the guys that's maybe fighting and they're doing their weight cut. So you'd go in and you'd help and support them, chat away.
That's class,
if there's anything that you need, and then straight away you become instantly a part of the squad that's there. Even though I knew Nathan and Junior and Barry before I went down, and when I left, you know, multiple of the guys.
Is there any that you really got on with, like proper clicked with?
A couple of the guys, a couple of them. One of the lads is actually fighting tonight, and he's a really, really good MMA fighter, but just kind of puts his hand to anything.
He
seems to be good. Like, he had a boxing fight a couple of weeks ago against like a guy that had won a couple of things in amateurs. I kind of think it was like a semi-pro type thing.
Right, okay.
Took the fight, and he's more of a jiu-jitsu sort of guy, but can strike really, really well.
Yeah.
Went and absolutely schooled him. He's got his first pro kickboxing fight and stuff like that tonight. He just kind of puts his hand to it. He's just right up for it. But it's these sort of people that you want to be in and around, good laugh and a joke, but they've been through stuff in our hand as well. One of the last day we went to Liverpool to show our support, our name's Chantelle Dyer.
I've seen her Barry's stuff, yeah.
Phenomenal. Lovely, really quiet lassie, but then when it comes to the striking side of things, I've watched her in the MMA sparring, butcher boys and have fun doing it.
Boy, did she spar the guys?
100%, like some of the smaller guys that's roughly about her weight category, butcher them, like hit them, laugh at them, hit them again, make them miss, hit them again. Like, she's lethal, but she's one to watch. Lovely, quiet, really down to earth lassie. But like, as soon as you get in and around that side of things, you see, even when I was doing my S&C side of things with Rory Lynn, great, great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But even the people that he was then training in and around, with Isaac Chamberlain was in at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's got a couple of the guys they're actually fighting in the PFL tonight.
Okay, yeah.
One of the guys, light heavyweight, I can't remember his name, is fighting for, I think it's £1 million he fight for tonight. In the like heavyweight final and stuff like that, so like you're in and around good athletes all the time.
Yeah,
and I think the big thing is it's a connection side of things.
Yeah,
between traveling to gyms, meeting different people you're spanning, but other training partners and stuff like that. I remember the first time I went down to London with Barry, I went to Shane McGuigan's gym.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love him.
Oh, lovely, lovely guy. Yeah, really good setup that they've got for the whole team. But as soon as I was going into sparring with Hassan, I've got Ellie Skultner, who was European champion at the time, Caroline Dubois, that was the next big thing obviously coming through. You had Daniel Dubois at the time, you had Lawrence Okole, and you had and Adam and his brother. Like, just warming up, going through their sessions. And Robbie Davis, Robbie Davis Jr. as well. Oh my God, this is some serious boys in here. Even that last time, like, I was down sparring, did some really, really good rounds with Adam. And I was obviously like focused while I was in during the spam, but I went back, it was like the end of the second round, I looked across, George Groves and Barry McGuinn are just sitting down watching the spam at the time. And I'd literally just seen George Groves with Carl Froch up at the Ardo a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had a little back and forth chat to him afterwards, stuff like that. But just being in around that sort of expertise, straight away your levels just go.
Must feel surreal, eh?
Ah, it really is. It really is, but that's what you're in boxing for.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, don't get me wrong, I'm like, oh, they're top pros, but it's exactly what I want.
You want to be there. You feel like you are there.
100%. And then soon as you go in there, soon as you're sparring, boom, respect earned straight away, and you push yourself to be that level. I think that's a big thing. If you're sitting sparring guys that you're getting the better of every single time, you can go through the motions. The wheels are just turning. You're kind of just going through it. But when you're up against guys that, like, for instance, Adam Azim.
Yeah, he's good.
He punches hard.
Oh, does he?
Eye punches hard right from the very start. So straight away, you actually get more nervous and excited for the sparring than you do for some of the fights, because the guys that you're in going with is top level. You make mistakes, you get punished, you learn from it.
That's wild, eh?
Yeah.
Another thing that's in my head is, obviously, you moved down to London. Mm-hmm. How quick, like, your relationship with Barry, it must be like father and son shit.
It's really, really tight. Like, for instance, a lot of the time where I got injured, he just had a young baby not too long and stuff like that ago. So, but for instance, every time there was a good boxing show on a Saturday night, I would be invited round to his house. So the funny thing is, where I would say he's North London, quite close to Camden Market.
Right.
So I'd go there, I'd be there from like 6 o'clock, the boxing maybe finished like 10:30. I wasn't getting home until probably like 2, 2:30 in the morning.
Jesus.
By the time it finished, like with all the trains and walking and stuff like that. But every single time I was always welcome, invited, meeting his stepdaughters, going after our sessions, taking them to Hampstead, he's going for a walk, having a laugh and a joke, playing darts, playing FIFA. Like, the big thing he wanted to do is, like, I don't want you to just do training and just sit in your room like a loner by yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, I want you to be involved. Like, this next time that we go down, I'm staying in North London. I think I'm only 20 minutes away from him.
Right.
He says there's a lot more things that we'll be able to do now that you're a lot closer. Come around for dinner, we'll go out for walks, like, go to the gym and stuff like that together.
If it really comes to
just things that you feel more included. And so I absolutely loved myself when I was down there, like, especially like in the gym, and I was fine being by myself.
Yeah.
It was just the distance was the big thing that then made a problem for that side.
So how did you find that you chilled out at nights? Like, obviously you had stuff on sometimes, but sometimes for me, outside looking in, sometimes you probably want to just go home and chill. Phone your family, phone your missus, things like that.
A lot of the time I was it. And then the big thing as well is, because I basically packed my life as much as I could into a suitcase and a bag.
Yeah.
So, like, as soon as I go home, I've got my dinner to make, I've got to look after, like, get my kit dried back out, because I'm probably going to be using it the next day. I've got to get my washing up today. I've got to keep myself ticking over as much as I could. I've never done so much word searches in my life. Never. Because I was sitting there watching, like, stuff on Netflix and stuff, and I'd get bored really quickly. And then I got a word search book, and I was rattling through it. I was doing like 5, 6 of them a night before dinner, and I was like, I'll just chill and watch back TV. But like, I had to do something to chill out as much as I could.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to do was be sitting watching TV till 1, 2 in the morning, because I knew I was back up at 6:30 the next morning. Like,
yeah,
I had to take that time as much dedicated as it was to the actual training.
Because what were you training, 6 days a week?
6 days a week, doing 2 sessions Monday to Friday, and then a hard sprint session on Saturday morning. And then after the sprints at Hampstead Heath, which is just hills and a running track.
I've seen that thing on your story, yeah.
But then go to an outdoor swimming pool.
Right.
Freezing, right? It's normally, the highest temperature it was when we were there was 6 degrees.
Highest
temperature. As soon as you go in, instant. Oh my god. Got a couple of laps of that, and then come out, get dried off, and then change, and we'll go grab a bite to eat, and then you can chill
for
a bit. And that's the week done.
Yeah.
And we've got to do an ice bath on the Sunday part of our recovery side of things. So
right, okay.
That it was tough, but like, when you're working that hard, see, as soon as that swim's done, like, you're dying for the swim, but see, as soon as it's done, you could not think of doing anything for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, I was
like,
done.
You were gubbed for it that you needed to rest.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one of the days on the Sunday, it was actually like, I think it was like the second last week before I came home. I said, like, I need to get out of the house, and went for a little bit of a walk. And I was like, oh, actually, there's a cinema. I wonder if there's anything good in. and watched three movies in a row at the cinema. I just went one to the night.
But you had a great time too.
I just went out of the house basically for it, but I also wanted to just relax and be in a different scene and different setting for it. But I just went out, chilled out the whole day, had my ice bath, had some food, went to sleep. That was my day. I loved it.
Yeah.
Like simple little things like that, you don't really take in consideration. Like obviously being up here, if I'm here, then I've obviously got my training to do. I've got to travel about looking, like driving. I've got things to pick up.
Yeah.
Like you've got your missus, you've got a friend, you've got a family, bits and pieces like that. That your attention gets brought different places. But when I was down there, it was me and me only.
Yeah. And how did you find, biggest thing for me straight off the bat, right? And this is why I'm a heavyweight, because I'd never stop eating. But if I was by myself for 10 weeks, you're sitting, like you're saying, you're bored. The temptation of eating and all that. Are you quite good in that sort of respect?
I'm good in that, but also I knew, like, when I went dental and I was too heavy from what I should have been.
Right, okay.
So I kind of had a wee bit of punishment to take up on myself. And when I was doing the fight as well, when it was originally supposed to be at welterweight, I knew it was going to be a tight cut to make that anyway. So I was strict right from the very start. And I think that's one of the big things even Barry said. He said, like, the performance side of things came down to the weight, but it wasn't anything to do with beforehand. He said, you're an ultimate professional. I would log everything, weight every single day when I was down there sending it through. I was almost, like, too tight and professional with it.
Right.
But then I just needed more guidance towards the end. So I've got a new nutritionist that's coming on board next week and stuff like that to get me dialed in, because the biggest and most frustrating thing for me, probably since about like my 7th or 8th pro fight, one of my first title fight, the Celtic title, was the person you see in the gym doesn't translate to the one on fight night as much. What I do in the gym is much better than what you see on fight night, even though I might be winning and get people stopped and like on fight night people think that's all that matters and they think that is I know myself, I think the people closest around about me that's in the gym and sees it, it's like the person in the gym just isn't quite translating on to fight night. So for me, it's the biggest thing and the closest thing would be the weight side of things. I'm always going to be tight for trying to make welterweight, so I think we're speaking about doing super welterweight again, but
just give you a little bit.
But even from then, like from where it started for super welterweight to now, I've filled out a good bit more already. So I just need somebody to help dial me in and then basically put the two dots together.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Last little thing on London. How did you find that with being away, like from your family? Did your family come down?
So I came back, I think it was the third weekend because I had my boxing medical to get done. So it was good to spend just the whole time with my girlfriend at the time. And then I think it was like the 5th or 6th week, my mom and dad came down for the weekend, which was great because they even, I went, did the running track and then just spent every minute with them basically since then, taking them out, looking at, that was the only time I actually got to see London.
Right,
when my mom and dad came down and my girlfriend came down.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you were just gym, gym, home, gym, gym, home, gym, gym, home. I was so then I felt like a tourist when I was taking them out. Going to Canary Wharf, going to the museums, all that stuff. None of that stuff. I'd literally seen my room, the train station, a couple of different gyms, and I'd maybe spot something out the window if I was doing the over again. And that was about it. Everything else, I was just head down, tunnel vision, this to this, back home, this to this, back home.
Do you think going there next time, going near Barry will help?
I think so, definitely. I think it'll be just more enjoyable. Like, I love the time that I was down there, but I think just the amount of time from travel and time by myself didn't fully experience the whole thing.
Yeah.
But going to the different gyms, meeting different people, the social side of things was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm just closer to the gym, closer to body, I'm going to be more involved with different bits and pieces that I don't have to worry about getting home at 2:30 in the morning on a Saturday. I'll probably dart along the train and be back home before 11.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be a big, big difference from not only my mental side of things, but also my rest side of things.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah. So before we finish up with some kind of quick fire stuff, you've obviously said that the next fight's, I don't know if it's been announced yet, has it? Do you reckon?
It'll probably be about now. Okay. About now.
So this will be coming out at 5 o'clock tonight, so we should be safe.
I'll be done by then.
Yeah, so.
I hope so, no.
What's the plan for it? It's Ardo.
The Ardo 10th of February, get out. I think I'm not actually sure who's going to be on the undercard for it, but I think there are one or two people making the pro debuts and maybe another fight that's on it. Just discussing with my manager if it could be 6 or 8 rounds. But I'm
actually not 100% sure.
Not 100% sure. Most likely it'll probably be 8 because realistically I don't want to go back like the 6 rounds again. Six rounds is quite comfortable. I can kind of just settle that pace quite easy. But if it's 8 rounds, I want to be pushing myself. And then obviously the fight that's going to be happening early part of summer is going to be a title fight. So I want to be as much momentum as I possibly can get for it.
So when's here for Christmas? Going to stay here for...
Here for Christmas. Go back down to London the 7th of January and come back up the 7th of February. Right. So I'm back for down there for exactly a month.
Yeah.
The way it works out. Get out the way, be home for 2 to 3 weeks, and then I'll be back down for, I think it's 10... Yeah, it'll be 10 weeks.
10 weeks.
10 weeks.
So what's the plan for next year? Three fights?
4 or 5.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, so I've got...
Because the injury's all clear now.
All clear. Got all clear this week, but obviously it's going to be something I'm just going to have to maintain. I kind of just go...
I'm recovered and just forget
about everything. I've got to still add a lot of the mobility and stretches and warm-ups into my daily routine.
Yeah.
Even if it's not in the gym, like I'll do my training session in the morning, but then in the afternoon I need to do some sort of mobility sort of work. Like you need to keep your body... moving, you know, yourself obviously doing the sports massages and stuff like that. It's you can do as much training as you want, but if your body isn't looked after at the same time, you're always got to be a couple of percent less, a little bit less.
Are you big on your recovery?
I think
more now,
more so now.
As you've got older,
I think more so now. Like when you're younger, you just think you can run through walls and you think you can just do it. But I think definitely where, especially being the full time pro, you're realizing that. The training is essential, but the recovery is just as much.
Yeah.
If you don't recover properly and you're running about seeing mates or doing X, Y, or Z in between in the training session night, you still don't feel 100% right, but then that knocks on to the next day, the next day, and the next day. So you need to, every single time I go into a training session, it's 110% for me.
Yeah.
So if I'm not resting properly, in the afternoon, the evening session, I'll give 110%, but my body's only got 100.
Yeah.
Or it's only got 90. It's only got 85. And eventually, that's where you start picking up injuries and niggles, and you need to try to get the most of it. So I think now with this injury, I'm like, right, I really, really need to concentrate and making sure the rest and recovery is absolutely essential.
Yeah. And is Barry quite switched on to that? Like the injury side of it?
Barry knew about my injury right from the very side. So did my strength conditioning coach, and we're trying as much as we possibly could to not aggravate it.
Yeah.
Give it a little bit of rest. Like, for instance, the shadow boxing only session. So every time you're punching, you want to be hitting a bag. You want to be hitting a patch. You want to be hitting somebody.
Yeah, okay.
But to do a shadow boxing session, you're like kind of just going through the motions. But when you're doing it properly, it's just as hard, if not harder.
Yeah.
Because you're so switched on, you've got to be thinking, you've got to be switched on. Your shape's got to be right. Your feet's got to be right. You've got to be punching correctly. You've got to be thinking afterwards.
Yeah.
It becomes a hard session, but it was what I needed to take the impact on, solely just drive my shoulder into the ground, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to finish with some quickfire stuff.
Hit me.
Hit me. So I think we've done this last time.
Yeah.
But it's obviously going to change, which is favourite boxer.
Favorite boxer, the person that got me into boxing would have to be Mayweather.
Yeah.
The time and the age and stuff like that, otherwise he was the big thing, and obviously trying to get fancy cars and all that. When you're younger, that's what you want.
And what about now? Is there anyone you look at? Because Josh Kelly's my one. I watch Josh Kelly constantly.
Yeah.
It's like, have you got anyone that you're kind of, your downtime in London and stuff?
I think now, the more and more I'm going up, I watch a lot of Southpaws, but a lot of different type of Southpaws.
Okay.
So, like, when I'd first started, if somebody had said to me to watch Southpaw, I'd probably just watch Manny Pacquiao, but I fight nothing like Manny Pacquiao. Or Lomachenko, I fight nothing like them.
Yeah.
But it's trying to add little bits and pieces from them. It's like taking one good bit that they do from that fighter, from that fighter, from that fighter. So a lot of the time, for instance, just now I'll watch a lot of good stuff with Josh Taylor, obviously, of Jack Cottrell, Shakur Stevenson, anybody that's kind of at that top level.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to replicate what they're doing. I'm just taking things that they do well and how that's going to impact my style and how I could add that.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I'm never going to be somebody that throws 150, 200 punches around.
Yeah.
But if I can add more combination punches into it, even better, or the way their foot moves or the defense that they think about. It's like nitpicking what you're wanting to take and extracting it, because I'm never going to go copy and paste the whole thing.
But that annoys me as well, when people be like, say you come out and do something in the next fight, folk will be like, oh, he thinks he's Lomachenko, mm-hmm. he thinks he's Josh Taylor. Who cares even if you do think that? Because mm-hmm. they're fucking Josh Taylor. Yeah. Like, why would you not pick someone off of people that are world champions?
Every single one of them looked at somebody else before them.
Yeah.
And admired them and thought, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Like, it's boxing.
When was the last time somebody came out with a new punch?
Yeah, it's...
It didn't happen.
It's like,
a corkscrew uppercut. You can put all the fancy names you want to it. It's an uppercut. It's a jab. It's a cross. It's a hook.
Yeah.
Like, there's only the basic fundamentals. You can glass it up. You can sparkles. You can make dance if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever you want. It's still the exact same as what the people did before you, and exactly the same as what the people's going to do after.
Yeah. Are you quite... Like you were saying that about watching people... You study boxing quite a lot?
A lot.
Yeah.
Quite a lot. I'm passionate about it. Yeah. I think that's a big thing as well. If I didn't enjoy the sport and I wasn't passionate about it, I probably wouldn't have stuck around for as long as what I've done.
Yeah.
Starting off taekwondo, kickboxing, then pro boxing. Like, just a couple of months ago, it was actually the 20th year anniversary of me starting competing. So I've been 20 years that I'm already in. So if I wasn't driven and passionate about it, I could have been a long, long way away from it. So the big thing is, for me, I'm involved in it. When there's big fights on, even if there's not big fights, but there's somebody that I'm interested in, so on, I'll be watching.
Yeah.
And not only just watch that time, but I'll watch it multiple times afterwards. And it's just kind of, you're a student at the end of the
student.
Day.
Yeah,
student,
yeah.
I'm not the finished article, and I've got a lot to improve on. So if I can look at the guys that's 2, 3, 4 steps ahead of me and take anything from them, it's only going to help me get closer. Yeah.
Love that. We've touched on this one already, but favourite fight you've had?
Favourite fight would obviously be the Italian.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's probably the favourite fight that I've had, from atmosphere to the occasion to even simple little things like getting the WBC badge that had to be like imprinted onto my shorts and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's cool as well.
Like, simple little things like that. I've got that saved from my mum and dad's a wee memory.
Oh, so they
like,
got that.
I give my sponsors either like signed gloves or some of the fight shorts and stuff like that that I've had before. But that one, like, for me and for my mom and dad's side, I think that's a nice little sentimental piece for it. But yeah, I'd definitely be the favourite fight.
And I know we asked this last time, and I'm intrigued to know if it's changed. Dream opponent. We'll do two. We'll do dream opponent and most realistic dream opponent.
Realistic dream opponent, anybody that's got the British title.
British title,
because then...
So who's the British title champion at your weight?
So it's super welterweight just now. It is...
Josh Kelly?
No, it is Samuel Antwi. Trains at Josh Kelly's gym.
Right, okay.
Josh Kelly had it vacated.
Yeah, Sam Antwi vacated it, right, okay.
So he's got that, but anybody really around that region, but anybody that's got that British title's on my hit list.
Yeah.
Because that for me was one of the big, big reasons getting into professional boxing, that anybody that's done things before in professional boxing, especially in Aberdeen with Lee and stuff like that, big admirer of what Lee's done. But to win the British title and be the first person to do it from Aberdeen, it's like, you can't take that away.
Like, and then dream opponent, just in general, like,
who's going to make the most money?
Mayweather, sure.
But I don't know, nowadays it's Logan Paul and Tommy Fury and that sort of stuff. But,
what is your, I spoke to Greg about this on the pod. What is your thoughts on...
You can't knock him.
Is what it is, isn't
it? You cannot knock them. Don't get me wrong, if you're a boxing diehard, only the way boxing's got to be, yeah, you can be against it.
Yeah.
It's poor. Like, don't get me wrong, but I've seen even the money that, like, Tommy Fury got for the KSI fight. It's ridiculous. Who wouldn't be in his shoes to do that?
Like, but then, at the same time, does that annoy you? Because me and Gregor spoke about that you knock your pants in, mate. Like, mm-hmm. you're saying, you've competed for 20 years, mm-hmm. and these boys have done an 8-week camp and made 2-3 million quid.
Easily for it.
When you think about it, is that a little bit like, fuck that?
Yeah, don't get me wrong, you'll always have that maybe... That ego bit, like, a little grip between your teeth, almost like saying, fuck you, basically.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you can't knock them because they're a certain position. They took the position. Like, took their, basically, their gift that they've been given to do it. Every single one of us would do it. Like, that's what the lot was for, is it?
Yeah.
Even when everybody puts on the lottery tickets to win the massive big jackpot, even though you haven't done anything to get anywhere near. Was it? I think tonight's the biggest one that they've done. It's like £200 million or something like that.
Yeah.
Nobody's worth that.
Yeah.
But if you can get it, you're going to take it. Nobody's got to turn that down, are they?
Yeah.
So, for instance, like, I'm all good. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't rile me. It doesn't get underneath my skin. Fair play to them for doing it. If if I was in their position, I'd do the exact same thing. Yeah. But for me, like, the money side of things never been something I'm interested in. Like, for instance, taking myself down to London definitely shows the money side of things isn't something I'm interested in. Because every single fight I've had since I've been in the negative, basically, for the way it works out.
Yeah.
So if money was interest, I would be probably right back on the tools and do PTs here or there and just keep ticking over at the ballroom and sell as much things as I possibly could and be happy with that side of things. But for me, I want to go and win big, big things in the sport. I'm passionate for it.
So that's actually what I was about to ask. I was about to put a scenario in front of it. So some Scottish YouTuber that, I don't know, Kaz Milligan, that boy, that's the way to start doing fighting. He comes to you and says, Dino, I want to fight. I want to fight you. You'll make this amount of money. Mm-hmm. He's obviously dog shit. Or there's that opportunity of winning a title, but you're going to make much more fighting the YouTuber. Mm-hmm. What you take in personally?
Say, for instance, if it's a British title, it's instantly.
Like, it's a British title, yeah.
Yeah, like that would be
that's your main goal.
It's an instant decision. Like,
money's money.
Keep your money. Looks all well and good, but for instance, like, money will come and go, and that's what I've said as well. Like, going down, like, money will come and go, but the wins and the feelings and success and that'll constantly be there. And especially, for instance, the British title for me as legacy straight.
Exactly. Love that. Favorite person? We'll do two. Favorite person to spar or favorite spar you've had? We'll do both. We'll hit you with both.
Favorite person I've sparred. I had some top quality guys,
really good ones,
especially recently. I've had a good, I think probably, I'll put him as my favourite person to spar because it was a funny situation and it was exactly what you would kind of picture him as, Liam Smith.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right, sparring Liam Smith, tough man.
Yeah.
Really, really solid, especially when he gets in close, he's absolutely dynamite. From every single angle. And that's kind of where the scouse comes out. Anyway. He's tasty, right? So he hit me with a shot, and it was below the belt, right? And I've stepped back in on my shorts and said, whoa. And he went, shut the fuck up, pushed me, and just kept going. Kept going the spine. Like, kept going, trying to take my heat off. He just went, shut the fuck up, pushed me, and kept going, right? But then afterwards, when I've done my back session, I'm chilling out on the back. Came over and sat next to me, spoke to me for 15 minutes solid out of his own time, telling me things I did good, things I could improve on, history about things with Southpaw, again, and then even some of his fight experience, telling me about fighting Canelo and all that side of things. Didn't need to tell me all that stuff.
Did he apologize for the cock shot?
No. Did he not? when you're sparring, you're in there to work for it, but I think that was probably my favourite moment that I've had for a long time. The other one that I could probably say was O'Hara Davis when I sparred him.
Yeah, that's class.
Because O'Hara Davis gets a lot of stick for being a dick, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a total
he's a nice guy.
Picked me and Barry up from the train station to take me to the gym for the sparring. In the sparring, we spoke to each other the whole time.
That's
winding
class,
each other up as much as possible. But straight away afterwards, like, came over, said the work was fantastic. Any Southpaw is fighting, he'll get me showered. And the very first thing they said to him after the sparring is, how are you not signed by somebody?
Ah, that's cool.
So, like, I totally appreciate it. Yeah, he maybe gets a lot of stick, but I think he's coming more and more out of his shell now that people are realizing, like, it was just immature.
Yeah.
And it was kind of put into a bad light. It's lovely guy.
You've got to sell fights, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can't sell fight your whole life by just being, sometimes you've got to fucking wind someone up.
Yeah, exactly. Heads. Sometimes you need a little push, little heads together. Nowadays, that's what sells fights.
Yeah.
The fights aren't done by contracts and boardrooms or anything nowadays. It's done on social media. On Twitter, you have one back and forth and next minute it blows up and everybody wants it.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, the pay-per-view side of things, where you could maybe get like 10,000 sales. You do one sort of back and forth, that's 50,000 sales.
Easy.
That's big pocket change that's making a difference.
So I'm going to throw this one. I didn't have this one in, but I've asked this a few times to combat people.
Yeah.
So I know that you obviously have friends that box.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, not so much cornering, but I know when the grudge match the other week, Mikey Grover, you were kind of helping him out.
Yeah.
Then you fought yourself. A lot of the boys say that watching someone is the most nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I get much more involved when somebody else doing it.
Do you get quite nervous? You can't do anything, eh?
I
say this all the time.
I also get the adrenaline shakes, like watching them. Like, I'll have adrenaline shakes after my fight once I've won.
Yeah.
Most of the time when you see people like getting a picture and I'm like, giving the full shake mode. But I get that more for other people that I know that's then going to do it. For instance, like my mate Conor Wilson was fighting on the
You made
so
the Conor.
So I done a couple of training sessions with Conor in the build up to it.
Yeah,
I could not wait for Conor to get on the fight. But I was shaking. I was touching my legs.
He's good, mate.
And I was excited for him to get. But like, it's so weird watching somebody else that you know, especially when they're inexperienced.
Yeah.
Even if they are experienced doing it, it's just a different feeling, especially if you've got a personal connection to them.
Yeah. And then what about Conor? Like Conor, actual like. I know you can't corner, but you enjoy it.
I enjoy it. I've done it from quite young, doing the kickboxing and stuff like that. Corner. Did a lot of coaching and stuff like that as well. And I like doing the coaching, PTs, anything like that helps out. But if I can have somebody come in at a certain level, and by the time they're, if not, say, finished training with me and they're at a slightly higher level, I've done my job.
Yeah.
So I take gratification from it, definitely.
I just find it weird because every single person I've asked all answer the same thing. Fighting is the least nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. Watching is the worst by far.
It becomes like riding a bike. Like, there's only so many new things that you're going to get. Don't get me wrong. It's a new venue, dangerous opponent, big event. You'll get the tingles and feelings and that for it, and it will get ramped up as the levels go higher. But like, I've had myself sleeping in the change room like an hour and a half before a fight. Because you're chilled out. Yeah. I've had the doctor say to me, like, when you're getting your pulse checked and stuff like that, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. Like, you're really relaxed. I'm like, yeah, I'm just fighting soon.
Yeah, it's,
like,
it's no big deal.
It's what we love to do. It's what we train the whole period of time for, that don't make it more than what it actually is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not. It's just me, one other person. We've got two hands, one head, one heart. And it's a fight.
It's a spar. Like, it's you spar all the time.
It's as simple as that. It's just, how am I going to try implement what I want to do and minimize what they want to do? And I think that's where you get a lot of enjoyment. And that's why you can't be emotional when you're going to fight. You need to use your head. I think that's the big thing.
That's one thing you said there. Obviously, I know you know her, Kristen Fraser. Mm-hmm. I was obviously her sponsor, followed her, big, big fan, big, big friend of mine. She used to sleep in changing rooms, man. I'm like, are you fucking... I'm like panicking.
You're more nervous.
I'm sat at the table, like, not eating my food and all that. Is she sleeping? I'm like,
so yourself.
She's just chilled, but...
But you need to be, because at the end of the day, it's like you learn through experience that if you're nervous or even your adrenaline's pumping beforehand, you get a massive adrenaline dump when it comes to fight.
Yeah.
Like, there's... Your energy just goes... Dump.
Aye.
So we always used to do, even like kickboxing when we were younger, we would have to go for quite a long run before we did our sparring, because it'd be like, you never go into a fight 100% fresh, that your battery is maxed out to the top. A lot of the times you've burnt up, you've walked about in your change room, you've hit pads, people's talking to you, and you know yourself as well, you're like nervous. Sweaty palms and that started going, your heart rate's right higher than it used to be.
Yeah.
That takes its toll when it comes to fight night also.
Yeah.
So it's trying to just control as much as you can, relax, and then your job's going to do itself. You've done 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks of training to then go in and try to do the fight.
Yeah.
Enjoy the moment while it's there. Even like my loss and stuff like that, like I enjoyed the whole moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, I didn't like the result, and nobody wants to get beat. But at the end of the time, the whole process of what I've done, it's not something I look back at as a negative.
You're negative talk.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes in nicely to the next question. What's a normal Dean Sutherland changing room like for a fight?
I love it lighthearted. I cannot stand it. See if somebody's sat in the corner and just sitting and they got their head down and they're just like shaking.
Dr. Dre blasting in their lungs.
Like, I'm totally about lighthearted, good little tunes on, little dance.
What's the go-to tunes before?
Oh, it's mixed up a couple of times, actually, to be fair. I like a bit of, like, 70s, 80s disco.
Love that.
I have some good moves. Feet get going with that. I'll tell you that, like, that. You look slick. And obviously, you probably like it as well. Like, Josh Kelly is one of the big ones.
Stevie Wonder and all that. Yeah.
Think of things like that. It just gets you right chilled out in the zone. Like, I don't think you need to be anything that's going to rile you up more than what you already need. You know yourself. You're ready to go fight. You know what's going to be happening. You just got to chill out and relax the moment as much as possible.
Do you just like a select few? Like, do you see your family before it?
When I first get to the venue, I'll always go around and say thank you very much to anybody that's came, like bought tickets and stuff like that. I'll go around all to the table and stuff like that. But then as soon as I leave them, then I'm switched on.
Yeah.
Then it's Barry, It's it was Dempo, my cut man, and stuff like that last time. Like a quite a small knit team. Yeah. Don't want a change room. It's packed full, and I can't move. I want quite a small knit team, but it's got to be a good laugh. I don't want anybody just like sitting there and it's just silence and just everybody's looking at each other like, fighting off.
Yeah,
it's got to be lighthearted. Like you've done all the hard work, just go and enjoy the whole moment. Yeah. And I think that's a big thing. If you're too uptight, intense, you're going to miss that sort of thing. You're going to miss that feelings that you have beforehand. Whereas if you're present and switched on, everything becomes part of the experience.
So when's the last time you see your parents in the venue itself?
Yeah,
because I know you're a big one. You're closer with your mum and dad.
Well, they're one of the first ones that I'll go and see when I arrive at the venue. Most of the time, like if they'll go for like the dinner options, stuff like that. They're sitting with some of my sponsors or friends or family or something like that. Then I'll go see them to say, obviously, how's everybody getting on? How's food? Just basic chit-chat and stuff like that. I always give the two of them a hug beforehand.
Yeah.
And that'll be the last time I'll see them until after the fight. But it's funny enough, my mum is one of the only people's voices that I can hear no matter what.
Kind of.
Every fight. Every fight that there's only a select few people that like the crowds can go nuts and be really really nice. You can hear it, right? But then especially when you're fighting, you can very very rarely pick out anything.
Oh yeah, you can't speak noise.
Apart from my mum's one of the voices I can hear all the time, and it's always after I get hit with a shot, and she's like, "Hands up, Ian." And I'm like, Lisa, I know. I didn't intend to get punched there.
Mate, hands up is the worst comment anyone can say. I didn't mean to get punched in the face.
It's obviously like me going to when you see, especially like if I'm a spectator and you're watching people, so obviously having a good time, getting boozy and stuff like that. Knock him out.
Ah, oh, fuck. I didn't think of that.
I haven't tried. Like, it just doesn't happen like that. It doesn't just go and hit the floor. It's like, it's got to happen a wee bit more, like, natural than that. But it's good and fun being part of. Like, I can, without the fans and stuff like that, same as any sport, without fans, it's not happening.
So, last question. You fought the ballroom. You've won. Yeah. Everyone's buzzing. The Sunday. What food are ordered?
So I had to have a good hard think about this because I never really go for the same sort of meals. My just normal tradition.
There's not a go-to.
It's normally traditionally I'll just go out with my brother and my girlfriend, my mom and dad. And I'll always just go out for a meal with them. On the Sunday, most likely. Mostly just go out for a food with them. But it changes because when you're doing training camps for such long periods of time, you miss out loads of different events beforehand. So like a lot of the time, that last one that we went out for in June was like, we hadn't really done anything beforehand for mum starting a new job, dad starting a new job, brother starting a new job. Yeah. Like it all kind of gets tied into one thing. Like after a fight, everybody's kind of sacrificed a little bit towards the experience beforehand. But then when it comes to going out and everybody's getting to just relax and be together, then it's kind of a celebration for multiple different things. Yeah, my fight might be the thing that we've tied the meal to.
Yeah.
But it's birthdays, it's anniversaries, it's new jobs, it's even bad things and stuff like that. It's in between that you haven't really noticed or just kind of got pushed to the side because that's not your main focus. It all kind of comes out. So that's why I always try and do, honestly, after a fight, I'll obviously go out for a few, but most of the people that I've been with, because they've been pre-drinking before the show started, and then they're drinking the whole time of the show. When it goes to that night out, if I'm there for about an hour, I've done well because they're all either absolutely blurred or they're wanting to go home and get taxed because they're knackered. So I'm fine with that. Most of the time, it's just I'll go out for one or two.
Can you drink after a fight? I couldn't drink after.
I don't have the appetite or the buzz to go into it. I'm too full of adrenaline as it is. But I'll always do it as well. Like I'll have one or two. My favorite thing is maybe going and getting some food afterwards, a pizza or a kebab.
So I was going to ask that because after my Pataudry fight, which was a big one for me, I went to McDonald's with my mate Cooper who fought, and we ordered so much food, mate. I had about half a burger now. I just couldn't eat.
Just didn't eat as much as
No, but the next day, mate, fucking,
I was going
for a jaffa.
For me, it's like the big thing. I'll always go. Like my big thing is that I love a kebab. Like, just like simple, so unclassy and anything like that. With it. No care what's. I'm not a big fan like the McDonald's side of things. For me, it's always a kebab. But then, because I'm full of adrenaline, like, I can be home in the morning, two, three. That last one that I did at the ballroom. So yeah. I think we'd got in the door at like just about 1:15, something like that. My girlfriend was knocked, she went to bed. I was up till 3:45 the next morning.
Yeah.
Eating my kebab, eating mozzarella sticks that was in the freezer, and watching my fight and replying to people.
Yeah.
Like
you can't sleep.
I cannot sleep for it. But then I'm always up before 9 o'clock the next morning, even if I've went to sleep so late. I'm up really early and then just get back to normal.
The day after the fight must be, well, I'm only going with my experience, but yours must be the same with the ticket you sell. Day after the fight must be just as busy because you've got to, like you're saying, reply to everyone, mate. But you want to at least try.
Yeah, no, I purposely do. Like,
phones are nuts on fight days.
It's nuts. I always my phone's well away. I never have my phone out. Even like if we're playing music, it's somebody else's.
So what do you do with your phone? Give it to?
It's in my flight bag.
I just leave it in the bag.
Yeah, in my bag. Like I'll maybe when I get to the venue, I'll make sure my mum and dad and my girlfriend they've got their seats in my hand. Fine. If I haven't went out and seen them, phone's away. Yeah. But then. When you come out, it's haywire.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, it's not.
Because that's one of my regrets from Pataudry. I was in a changing room myself because I didn't want to watch other fights because two of my mates were fighting. Didn't want to watch them. Mm-hmm. One loss, but I'm glad I just didn't watch at all. Mm-hmm. But one of my regrets is looking at phones. Not for anything bad, but it's just like a little message. Folk are like, good luck. Like, you've done well. And you're like, fuck. You just... One of my biggest things I wish I just chucked it in the bag. Mm-hmm. You obviously do that. It's just switch yourself off.
You need away from it because like even like during fight day, you'll be on little bits and pieces, but it's just distractions, isn't it? It's just something taking you away from being in the present moment because at the end of the day, like you need to be switched on to try and perform to your absolute best.
Yeah.
The big thing for me is like I'm not a fan of having multiple different fighters in the change room. Even if I'm the main event and they're the first fight, still not something I really like to do.
You normally got a change room yourself at ballroom?
No, because the ballroom is quite a small venue for the change room side of things. I'm always sharing a change room with somebody. But I much, much prefer if it's somebody early on the card so they can have their fight, get out of the way, and it's gone. I've kind of got the room to myself. Yeah. Ideally, I would have the room to myself right from the very start. But that's not trying to be uptight. Oh, yeah.
No, it's not.
It's not like that. It's just I like my own zone. And then when you've got other people... You kind of watch what they're doing and why that's different. From
just little tiny things, little
things like that. Or
you watch them get their hands wrapped. Why the fuck are you watching that? Yeah, but it's like you just do it.
Little things like that. Like that last time I was sharing the change room with Ben Bartlett, and Ben didn't do a warm up or anywhere near what I thought was a warm up.
Yeah,
and then just went out and fought. And we're sitting in the change room thinking, the fuck, he hasn't even done a proper warm-up.
But that's distracted you.
Like, that's different from what I would do, and it's just like, don't really need that. It's not my norm of what I would do. Let's just get that out of the way. As soon as he's out the change room, yeah, congratulate him when he comes back. But it's almost like I'm very quite quiet and stuff like that, unless they're speaking to me, quite quiet beforehand until they go, and then I'm able to relax a lot more. Yeah. Then I'm able to come out my shell.
Love it, mate. Thank you so much for spending the time with me today.
My absolute pleasure.
Glad to see the injuries all healed up.
Yeah.
By the time this is out tonight, the fight should be announced.
We
hopefully won't be in trouble for anyone.
No, we shouldn't be anyway. I greatly appreciate it.
But all the best in the future, and I'll make sure I'm at the fights, and hopefully we can do this again after the next one.
Definitely.
Thank you
very much, bro.
Thank you very much.